At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Future Proof Extra from News Talk.
Now, the periodic table is a cornerstone of the science world and a core to how we understand everything around us. But the periodic table is a living document, one that has undergone significant change since its inception in 1869. So how are we adding to the periodic table, and what are these elements? Well, Dr. Kit Chapman is an award-winning science journalist and author of Super Heavy, Making and Breaking the Periodic Table. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, Kit.
Thank you for having me.
What is a super heavy element? How do we classify that?
So the super heavy elements are the elements from 104 and up. So we have around 118 elements that we know of at the moment, up to about 92. Those are the elements that we can find on Earth. And then we have a couple of groups at the bottom. We have the lanthanides and actinides. Now, 92 is an actinide, but they eventually ran out of those, and so they needed a new name. What's bigger than an actinide? They couldn't come up with anything better. They said super heavy element.
What is an actinide?
So the periodic table, as we structure it, is arranged into groups. So you have group one, for example, and they follow similar trends. So people probably did an experiment at school with lithium. You throw that into water, it fizzes a little bit. Sodium, you put that into water, it bursts into flames. Potassium, you put that into water, it explodes. That's all in group one. They have similar trends. What we found, though, is that there are two areas of the periodic table where things don't follow the trends down the groups. They follow them along. They're very, very similar. And so we decided to take these out of the table as we present it. And we call them the lanthanides because they start with lanthanum, and then the actinides because they start with actinium.
So for those who aren't great at remembering their childhood chemistry, and I'm raising my hand here, the thing that separates the elements as you go along the table and down, along the table is adding protons.
That's right. So as you go along the periodic table, the number of for the element is the number of protons it has. So hydrogen has one proton, helium two, lithium three, beryllium four, boron five, and so on, right up to organeson, which has 118 protons. They also have neutrons in the nucleus, although these numbers vary. So you can have different numbers of neutrons and the same element. Doesn't really matter. It's the protons that are important. And as we go up the periodic table, they increase the number of electrons as well, because protons are positively charged, electrons are negatively charged. You want to increase those. And we found that arranging them in the periodic table through properties, stacking them, also happen to arrange as the electron shells are arranged. So hydrogen and helium, for example, when they have a complete shell, they have two electrons orbiting around them. And then when you go down further and further, you start getting more and more shells. And so that's how the periodic table is structured.
Right. When you say organeson has how many protons?
118 protons.
This is obviously a problem because elements want to stay stable, right? They want to sort of come to a relaxed state, so to speak. And when you have that many protons, does that mean that you interact with everything or you don't interact with anything?
So the interactions depend on the electrons and how the electrons are sort of trying to fill those shells. The problem organeson has is because you've got so many protons, they're all positively charged. And if you think about pushing two sides of a positively charged magnet together, they want to repel. That's why the neutrons are really important. They are neutrally charged. They're kind of like packing filler. But even so, with so many positive charges wanting to push apart, the elements inevitably break up. And so once we get down to the bottom of the periodic table, they're all so big that they are trying to break up. And that is what radiation is.
Yeah, they sort of break into smaller elements down the table.
they try and break down into smaller elements. So usually what they do is undergo something called alpha decay, and they lose an alpha particle, which is roughly equivalent to a helium. So you're losing two protons and getting those out of your system. And so they break down into lighter elements. And sometimes they even spontaneously combust. It's called spontaneous fission, and they just explode and they break up into much lighter things.
And this obviously is essentially the nature of fission. This is how we try and get nuclear energy out of atoms, by getting a sort of unstable atom that's ready to decay. And then when that happens, a huge amount of energy is given off by those atoms, right?
Absolutely. So fission is all about those atoms breaking apart and releasing the energy. And people are probably very familiar with the equation E equals MC squared. It's probably the one physics equation everybody knows. Well, that's energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Now, the mass of a uranium atom breaking apart is tiny. It's really, really small. But the speed of light squared is such a huge number that means that when a single uranium atom explodes, it goes under fission, it releases enough energy to shake a grain of sand. And of course, this is how a nuclear weapon works. If you can get enough of those atoms exploding at the same time, you have enough power to devastate a city.
So let's talk about Mendeleev then, because he had no idea about these elements, but he must have theorized that you could keep adding because he had this structure.
Well, Mendeleev was a very interesting chap. I mean, he was interested in his personal life as well. He was a bigamist, which people don't talk about very often. But when he came up with the periodic table, he was looking predominantly at weight. He didn't know about protons and neutrons. They wouldn't be discovered until the 20th century. And so he was just trying to arrange them and make sense of what he could see. And there were actually elements that he deliberately left out. He left gaps in the jigsaw puzzle he was constructing, saying, I think we're missing an element there. And when those elements were discovered, a couple of years after he came up with his table, we suddenly realized he was onto something. But even so, Mendeleev couldn't predict many things. So, for example, there's a group called the noble gases, and they have complete electron shells. And because they've got complete electron shells, usually they are very, very unreactive. They're not interested in doing anything. And these include things like neon, krypton, and argon. And Mendeleev didn't believe they existed. They were discovered right at the end of his life. He was like, that doesn't fit my pattern. That can't be right. And eventually he was persuaded that they do exist. So you're absolutely right at the start. The periodic table is this living document that we are constantly adding to.
So at the moment we have 118 elements, 119 and 120 we feel are probably quite close. Talk to me about how these elements get discovered, because there are some really fascinating stories that you go through in the book about these characters. Let's start off with James Harris, because most people don't know who James Harris is.
Yeah, James Harris was the first African-American to discover an element, an incredibly talented chemist. He was working in the 1960s, 1970s, and he left the army. He was an army regular. And he couldn't get a job. He would go to chemistry labs and people assumed that he was applying to be a janitor because of his skin color. He faced incredible racism. He was given a shot at Berkeley. He joined them as the person that actually purifies the targets. And that's a really important job, because when you try and create elements that don't exist on Earth, and anything beyond uranium is way too unstable. If you think about the age of the Earth, as I mentioned, it's highly radioactive. These big elements, they're going to have broken apart long time ago. And so you've got to basically shoot two lighter elements together and smash them. And he would make the targets, and you needed incredibly pure targets to know what you were shooting at. So incredibly difficult chemistry. And he worked on the targets for what became elements 104 and 105. So first African American to discover two chemical elements.
You said that beyond uranium, these so-called trans-uranium elements are too unstable to exist in the natural world. Where is uranium in that list of 118?
So uranium is 92, element number 92.
Right.
There are some elements that are too radioactive to exist on Earth that are a bit lighter. Technetium, which is element 43, we can't find that on Earth. We actually use it a lot for diagnostics in hospitals. And what we do is we take molybdenum, which is element 42, the next one sort of underneath, and we do something called beta decay, beta radiation, and that turns one of its neutrons into a proton and bumps it up to technetium. But beyond uranium, and then we start to get things like neptunium and plutonium, they're all named after planets, that little area. That's the kind of area where we just have to make stuff. We cannot actually find it on Earth, with one exception. One person has managed to find plutonium.
So these elements that aren't very stable, what can we use them for apart from something like fusion? What could we use anything beyond uranium for if it's very hard to stick around?
Well, they are incredibly useful because of their various radioactive properties. Americium, for example, that's an element that was discovered actually during the Second World War. It was while they were working on the atomic bomb project. It's an element just beyond plutonium. And we use that today for a completely different purpose. We use that in smoke detectors. So if you look at your smoke detector, you'll see that it has a tiny amount of americium in there. And that's what we actually use to detect smoke. Curium, we use that for there's some medical treatments, but also we've used that on the Mars rover as part of its spectroscopy kit. So we're doing science with these as well. So it's not just about power and it's not just about weapons. Actually, there are real practical applications. Californium is the rarest element that you can actually see, that you can actually make enough of to physically see. And I'm really lucky I have actually seen californium. That is incredibly valuable.
How much californium exists in the world?
A tiny, tiny amount. You're talking about a sort of a speck of dust, essentially.
and you saw this speck of dust. What was that like, kid?
Dust at the end of a test tube. It was a sort of a greeny blue color, and it was absolutely astonishing. It reminded me of that famous photo of the Earth, you know, surrounded by the black void. There was this tiny little bead, and I was looking at that, thinking, as far as we know, in the universe at this moment, unless a neutron star is colliding into another neutron star and making something heavier, which could happen, or a supernova is going off, that is the rarest thing in the universe at the moment, and I'm staring at it.
I know what that feeling is like, because I was lucky enough to be in ITER as they were building this new machine that was going to recreate fusion and try and get a sustainable fusion. And at that moment, I was standing in what would be the hottest place in the universe once it was turned on. So that was kind of a cool feeling. So tell me about Mendeleev, because Mendeleev eventually made his way into his own a table of elements with Mendeleevium. Which, there's a great story about how Mendeleevium was discovered.
Mendeleevium was discovered with the help of a Volkswagen Beetle. So this was in California. It was at the University of California in Berkeley. And these were the guys who really knew what they were doing. Just before the start of and after the Second World War, they were discovering all of the elements. They discovered plutonium and americium and curium. And they were faced with a problem, because they'd got to the point where the elements were so unstable that they were breaking apart in minutes, perhaps even seconds. And so they needed to get their sample from their accelerator, which is where they've actually smashed those two elements together, up to the chemistry lab and do the chemistry and prove they've made the element as fast as possible. The problem was that the chemistry lab was at the top of a hill and the accelerator was at the bottom. So what they would do is they would grab the target, they'd have a little gold foil catcher, and anything that they made would have pinged off and caught onto this gold. They shoved it in a vial of acid, put their thumb over the vial. They rushed out to a waiting Volkswagen Beetle that had been supercharged, and they gunned up the hill. They used to do this at midnight because there'd be no traffic. Security guards would have to jump out of the way. They would drive up to the chemistry lab, and they would rush in there, do the chemistry. And the guy who was doing this, a chap called Al Giorza, once the chemistry was underway, there was nothing to do. And so he came up with this wheeze. Rather than sit there watching the experiment and being incredibly bored, he decided to hook it up to the fire alarm. And so if there was something detected, if there was a new element found, the fire alarm would ping off. And so they all went off and they had a few beers and they were relaxing. And sure enough, the fire alarm goes off. And they write hooray on their little notepad. Again, it goes off, double hooray. Goes off again, triple hooray, fantastic, we've definitely discovered a new element. They all go off and have breakfast. The problem is they forget to unhook the fire alarm. And so a couple of hours later, yet another atom is discovered, the fire alarm goes off, they come back, and they have managed to evacuate what was then one of the leading nuclear labs in the world, with 11 Nobel Prize winners sort of walking around in there. They've all had to sort of flee because they thought the lab was on fire. It turned out they'd just discovered Mendeleevium.
absolutely fascinating speaking with you. Always is. Kit Chapman is the author of Super Heavy. You can find it in shops now or order it from a local bookstore. Kit, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.